Our podcast will begin in just a moment. InvestTalk distribution made possible by KPP Financial. Steve Peasley, President. Coming up early next month, a free InvestTalk Wealth webinar. There's one emotional commodity that's in big supply these days. The way forward is even more unsure. A new political regime and an aging bull market, along with questions about economic growth, monetary policy, it all adds up to more questions than answers. So if you're looking for some light to remove the shadows, join Steve and Justin for How to Prosper in a Year of Change 2017. It's set for December 7th, 6:30 to 7:30 p.m. Pacific Time. The economic changes may be dramatic. How will you respond? Join Steve and Justin for this hour-long discussion on December 7th. It is free, but you do need to register online. Attendance is limited. Just do that on investtalk.com. And now, today's podcast. You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Good afternoon, everybody, and welcome to the Thursday edition of Invest Talk. And, of course, I welcome you always to Invest Talk. We do this Monday through Friday, 4 to 5 p.m. on the West Coast. We try to work with you. We try to help make better choices. We all want to make them better choices in investing and avoid costly mistakes. We all want to do that. If you're investing, if you're deciding, you're making decisions, okay? And sometimes, many times the decision is to do nothing, by the way. It's not always I have to make a decision to buy or sell something. You can just do nothing, too. Nothing. And that is a decision. I just worry that people sometimes do nothing because they just don't think about it. That's not a decision, okay? You got to be diligent. You know, you have to, and that doesn't mean you're watching it every second of every day. I'm not talking about that. I'm talking about understanding the economy, understand what the Federal Reserve is doing, what other countries are doing in relationship to our country, economically speaking. What direction is the market generally overvalued or undervalued? What is working better? That is some sectors working better than others? And not that you should jump into them, but you should understand how it works and the relationship, that kind of thing. On and on and on and on. So we're going to talk about why you might consider moving from value stocks to moving from growth stocks to value stocks. There have been many growth stocks that have done very, very well since our recession, end of our recession. Apple, Google, you name them. There's lots of them. And we're suggesting that run might be coming to a close and value might be coming more popular. We're also going to talk about the impact of global politics. Now, I'm not talking about we're going to get into politics. We're going to talk about the impact on our market by global politics. In my market commentary earlier this week, I wrote about a currency war. We all know there's a currency war. If you don't, then maybe you know it as another term called competitive devaluations. That's the nice, soft words to use. Competitive devaluations, not a currency war. It's pretty simple to understand. It's an effort by one country to devalue their own currency in relationship to another country's currency. Why do they do that? To gain an advantage in trade. The country that's devaluing their currency wants to increase their exports, thus boosting their economy. If their currency is worth less, their products are cheaper to other foreign countries with a currency that is more expensive than theirs or valued higher than theirs. Very simple. By the way, a currency war is very rare, by the way. It's not often that we've had this over the years, over the decades, and it's just rare. Now, how do you say, well, how can a country devalue its currency? If their currencies are traded against each other in an open market, how does a country, first of all, it's not as open as we all would like it to be, but in an open, how does a country devalue the currency? Well, one way is Japan did it for years and years and years, and they would buy American dollars and sell their Japanese yen to make their currency worth less. The central government would do that, central bank, Bank of Japan. You can also lower your interest rates. Lower your interest rates, which would, what would they call that? Quantitative easing, QE. So we lowered our interest rates here in the U.S. for years and years and years, right? To try to spark our economy. Well, how would that spark our economy? Well, make money easier to borrow. But how's that make our currency move up and down? Well, remember, if you're a country and you want your currency to be cheaper, well, you want to make it less attractive, lower the interest rates of your debt, then no one wants to buy your debt, and then it would make it, you know, make the value go down and down and down. Same. So it's an effort to just manipulate the value of your currency with the disguise that, no, I'm not manipulating my currency. That's not, no, I'm not doing it. What I'm doing is lowering my interest rate so my companies and borrowing costs would be cheaper to spark the economy here. And just because it has another add-on effect of lowering my currency, that really wasn't my effort when it really was. you don't necessarily believe what they say. You watch what they do. And that's true in any relationship. You ever notice that? People say things, but you really want to watch what they do. The same way with politicians and central bankers. What they say is meaningless. It's what they do. So that's how they could do it. Pretty interesting stuff, I think it is. And does it work, devaluing your currency? Does it? It can't work if everybody's doing it, right? How can it work? And if it could work so well, how come our economies around the world aren't just growing like gangbusters? Not working so good. So that's why it doesn't work. Why are they taking forever to find that out? I don't know. So we're going to talk more about global marketplace and particularly how global politics can disrupt markets. Also how central bank policy can impact portfolios. And we're talking about next year, how they're going to impact your portfolio next year. We'll have compelling reasons why you should transition from growth to value stocks. We'll tell you why. We'll show you why.
Another information source to help you improve your investing skills and gain you some stress-relieving perspective is our KPP Premium newsletter. It comes out each Friday, and one of the most popular features is our Stock Watch. At least a couple of companies are introduced to you to watch in each edition. To sign up, just go to investtalk.com today.
Now, do you have questions about growth versus value stocks? Maybe you'd like to know more about our conference format. Well, we can talk about that. Any money miners questions, whatever you want to talk about, long as it's financial, we'll talk about it. Let's go to our 24-hour listen line. Let's get the Q&A portion of the program going. 888-99-CHART is our anytime number.
Hi, Steve and Justin. This is Eric from Utah. I just had a question regarding when to buy the second half of like a stock positions. For example, I've got a half position in GBX, Greenbrier Railroad stock, and then a half position in Lockheed Martin. My GBX position is down a little bit, and my Lockheed Martin position is now in good shape after the recent, yesterday had a really nice run. Anyway, just trying to understand if there's like a rule of thumb for when to buy the second half of your position. If you wait for a certain percentage drop, or if it's going up, if you say, okay, here's the opportunity, it's turned around, it's heading in the right direction, now I'm going to put my other half position in. Anyway, if you have any thoughts on that, I'd really appreciate it. Thank you so much. Love the show. Bye.
Okay, when you put in a half position and you want to actually have a full position at some point, you have to decide the time that you bought the half position is where you want to buy your other half. Now, if you feel the company, you might be overpaying. If you feel that you you're buying up because you just don't, it hasn't stopped running up and up and up and up, and you're missing out it. You want to buy half a position because you're worried that you might be getting into it at a later date. Then you decide, well, I want to buy the other half when it pulls back. If you're buying half a position because it looks like a bottom, but you're not quite sure, then you want to buy your other half position when it starts moving up. Okay, I'd like buying half positions when the stocks are starting to move back up, whether they're pulling down or coming from a bottom and moving up, or already at a bottom moving up, whether they're pulling up. I like to see them turn around a bit before I jump into them, because you never know if they're coming down where the bottom is. You see support if you read a chart, but you got to make sure that support holds, and it doesn't always hold. It tends to hold, but doesn't always hold. And there's no really rule of thumb except your own that you write down when you buy your half position. The reason why I'm saying you write it down, because you'll forget why you're going to buy your second half. You write down why you bought the stock. And if those things are still true and you bought half position and it pulls down to a place where you thought it could find support, you should have written that down, and I'm going to buy the other half at this number. And if everything's the same, you buy it. So there's no really rule of thumb of when to buy. But you can help yourself out if you write down your reasons for buying the first half, buying it at all, and then write your reasons why you want to buy the second half at a certain point. You just gotta be consistent in your approach. Don't get emotional about it. See, what will happen is you get emotional about it. You see it pull down to where you said you were going to buy the other half, and then you don't do it because it went down. Well, then your thinking was wrong at the very beginning because you can't pull the trigger. Your emotions are driving your decisions, not you saying, oh, I'm going to buy this here because it would be a much better buy at that point. Or I'm going to buy here. It's now broken out to new highs. I want to buy it as it keeps running up. You have to write that down and be consistent about the decision making. Glad you're with us today. Is there such thing as a risk score? Yes. It's an actual number assigned to help you measure your investment, your investment risk tolerance, your personal risk tolerance. You can also score a portfolio with a real number too. Use our free risk analysis tool on investtalk.com.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-992-4278. Call and give me a question. I'd love to answer questions. As long as they're financial, I'm very happy to talk about it. The case against ETFs, the case against them. What's wrong with ETFs? The founder of Vanguard and his former chief investment officer said that they're not as safe as they seem. That's going to be the talking point, the main talking point. The founder of Vanguard, Bogle. You remember Bogle? Anyways, also I want to talk about why cash is no longer king. Cash is not king. I'm talking about the use of cash, by the way. 10-year treasury rise to the highest yield since June. Why are the yields going up? I mean, remember the Federal Reserve having to change rates. You got to remember, bonds in the United States don't trade in a vacuum. Values and yields change, go up and down, but it's not in a vacuum. Something else is going on. Remember, that's on. We got to understand all the pressures that push bonds up and down. And did you see Tesla's numbers? They made money. Second quarter in their history that they actually made money in quarter three. But did they really? Did they? I think we should talk about Tesla. And I love Tesla, by the way. I love the concept of a new automobile company, going to be a big automobile company coming in, and it has a brand new technology, you know, with the electric cars, when the old car companies were, you know, give you these very inferior electric cars, and here comes along Tesla with super duper fancy looking cars that have great great distance abilities on their batteries and stuff. Totally blowing out the old school car companies with their new thinking. I love that. I think that's great. It's called creative destruction. They're creating something new. But I'm not so sure that the valuations are right. So I want to talk about Tesla a little bit, if we can. I really do. Those are the talking points we're going to discuss, that I'm going to discuss. But, of course, you drive the program. So what do you want to talk about? I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and you're listening to Invest Talk. Remember, we're not all about stocks and bonds. Do you have questions about life insurance, real estate, trust, wills? How much money should you have when you retire? Any money questions is welcome. 888-99-CHART.
Now is a good time to call InvestTalk.
I had a question on my 401k.
We're here for you. What's your question? 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve right now on InvestTalk. You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Okay, so let's talk about the case for against ETFs, exchange-traded funds. You know those are those funds you can buy and sell like stocks but act like mutual funds. And the case against them, this is Bogle, the founder of Vanguard, talking about why he thinks that they're not the best. It mostly surrounds that he does not like the broad, that they're not all broad-based index funds. He thinks even the index funds that they are, that many of them are now very narrow, and that some of the ETFs are just buying a single asset like gold or whatever, and he thinks that's unwise. That's his biggest complaint. That people are not investing them, they're using them to trade. And he thinks that the companies that do that, that produce the ETFs for trading, is wrong. And of course, you know, we talk about those leverage ETFs that I don't like, that you could buy and sell, and those are specifically designed for trading. And, you know, it's not the best. I'm telling you, it's very difficult. Very difficult to try to guess what sector is going to move up or down. Now, I don't have a problem using ETFs to build a broad-based sector portfolio, but trying just to pick one sector to do well, and it's just very, very difficult to do that. Very, very difficult. So that's what the biggest complaint about them from Bogle. You remember, he likes the S&P 500, big, broad indexes. The broader, the better. Okay, just buy them and hold them. Don't try to trade them. We're going to go to Brian in San Diego. How are you doing, Brian?
I'm doing great, sir. How are you doing?
Good. Thanks for calling.
What's the difference between a Roth IRA and a standard IRA?
Okay. And you know what? I'll bet you, Brian, there are a lot of people out there have the same question, just don't want to ask it. It's very simple. Both are retirement vehicles, obviously.
Right.
Roth IRA. The only difference you have is how the taxes are treated, okay? In a Roth IRA, you make money, you earn money right now, and you say, I'm going to put my money into a Roth IRA. Well, the money that you're putting in there is taxed, income taxed. So it's after tax. It's just regular money that you have left over you're going to put in there. Now, a regular IRA is after tax. In other words, if you put $3,000 in a Roth IRA, it's after tax money. If you put $3,000 in a regular IRA, you get to take that $3,000 off your adjusted gross income, so you don't have to pay taxes on it.
Oh, okay.
Now, once it's in the IRAs, since a regular IRA, you never pay taxes on the money going in, when you start taking it out, when you're 65, you have to pay taxes on it every dime you take out of a regular IRA. So let's say you put $3,000 and over the years it grew to $10,000. When you take that $10,000 out, you got to pay tax on the entire $10,000. In a Roth IRA, since you paid tax on the money when you put it in, and it grows from $3,000 to $10,000, when you start taking it out, you never have to pay taxes on it. So that whole $10,000 you don't have to pay taxes on now, ever. So on the growth in a Roth 401(k) IRA, on the growth, as it grows over the years, you never pay taxes in a Roth, but you do pay taxes on all the money in a regular IRA.
And there's no difference in distribution as far as the age goes. You have to be, what, 59 and a half or something like that?
On a Roth, the difference is you never have to take it out.
Okay.
But on a regular IRA, you have to start taking out at 70 and a half.
Okay.
Because they want their tax dollars on that money.
Sir, you're a scholar. I want to thank you so much for your time.
Thanks, Brian. Appreciate the call.
Nice evening. Thank you.
Thank you.
Our InvestTalk mission is to help you make better investing decisions. To do that on your own, thumbs up or thumbs down choices based on good, solid investing principles. But we need your questions to keep us on track. 888-99-CHART or click on Contact Steve or contact Justin on investtalk.com.
Okay, let's go to Mark in Stockton. How you doing, Mark?
Yeah, I just left my company about a month ago, and I just wanted to know what I should do with my 401k plan.
Great. I'm glad to hear that they have 401ks. Most companies do these days, and there's no reason why they shouldn't. You can do two things. Did you start a new job?
Yes, I did.
And they have a 401k also?
No, they don't have a 401k. I'm a contractor, so they don't have any benefits.
Then what you want to do is you want to roll the 401k into a IRA.
Okay.
Okay, and it's very simple to do. Don't think it's complex. You can roll that into any type of account. You can go to a bank and roll it into a savings account. You can roll it into a mutual fund account. You can roll it into a stock account. Any place you want to will roll it into. And then you can hire somebody to manage it for you, like us. You know,
okay.
We manage all types of IRAs. And we do rollover 401ks into IRAs all the time.
Is there any fees to roll over the money from 401k to?
It's free. It's no cost. Now, if you have a 401k and it's invested in certain mutual funds, you may have to sell off those mutual funds. In other words, put it all in money market before you roll it over.
Oh, okay.
But just call anybody who you want to help manage your money, or you can do it yourself. You can go to E-Trade or someplace else, call them up and say, I want to roll this 401k, and they will send you the paperwork. There's also a form that you're going to have to get from your old 401k, from whoever's running that, your plan operator. There'll be a form that needs to be filled out. If you want us to help you with it, give us a call. We'll be happy to do most of that for you.
Okay. Maybe I'll give you a call then.
Okay. Appreciate the call, Mark.
Okay. Thank you.
Thank you. So. We're open to your money questions and comments at 888-99-CHART. That's how you get through right now. I'm Steve Peasley. You're listening to Invest Talk. Give me a call, 888-99-CHART.
We thank you for subscribing. Take the stress test. This is a way to measure your comfort level when it comes to risk in your investment portfolio. It's an important foundation to build your strategy on. It's a 3-minute series of questions that you can answer online to determine your individual risk level. Just go to investtalk.com and click on the Invest Talk tab.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
888-99-CHART, we're going to talk to Lucy in San Jose. How you doing, Lucy?
I'm doing good. How are you, Steve?
I'm good. Thanks for the call. I appreciate it.
Yeah, so I have a question. So basically, I work for a small biotech, and they recently told us that they are going to roll out ESPP as a benefit. And I'm wondering, what are the considerations, you know, I should have?
Okay, like, they're gonna roll.
How do I know should I buy?
What are they gonna roll out as a benefit?
ESPP.
Okay, ESOP.
Purchase one.
Okay, let's talk about ESOPs then. And for everybody else, Lucy, ESOPs are, you know, the company sells you their shares. They allow you to buy their shares at a discount. Did they tell you, Lucy, how much of a discount they'll let you buy the company shares?
15%.
Okay, that's fairly common. a 15% discount. This is the benefit is you're getting the stock cheap. You're getting it for 15% off of what it's selling for out in the marketplace. And Lucy, of course, it can go up and down in value just like any stock, right? Goes up and down in value.
Right.
The danger is if you buy the stock, and usually there's a holding period. Did they tell you that you had to hold on to it for a certain length of time?
They haven't tell us the policy yet.
Okay. Well, the danger is sometimes they tell you, sometimes they tell you can sell it, you can buy it today and sell it tomorrow. Some companies will allow you to do that. But many of them tell you, want you to hold on to the stock, so they have a holding period. You got to hold on to it for 6 months. Well, what if it goes down 30% in 6 months? So there's your danger, Lucy. You're locked into it for a certain
okay.
period of time. So find out if there's a lockup period whenever you buy your ESOP. Okay?
Okay.
And remember, when you're getting a 15% discount, you got to think about your tax consequences on that situation. Because when you sell it, you got it at a certain price, and then you still have your capital gains tax. You've got to consider short-term versus long-term and all that stuff. And another danger is don't get too much of your own company stock, of your overall portfolio or your wealth. You don't want it to dominate your wealth. So be careful
right.
of that, too. That's another danger. Those are basically the dangers.
Okay.
If it's a good, solid company, it's a great benefit. It really is. Okay?
Okay.
Thanks, Lucy. Call me up with details, and you know if you have any questions about it, just let me know. Send me an email. I'll help you answer the questions.
Thank you.
Thank you, Lucy. Okay. Appreciate it. Yeah, so your biggest danger is lockup periods and getting too much of it. And if it's a weak company, you don't even want the stock. You know, the benefit is not as great as you might think. So you got to make sure you all those things are considered. Cash is no longer king. And what I mean is $23.2 trillion in the world is credit card or debit card use, not using cash. And 22.6 is cash. So it's the first time more credit card and debit cards are used than cash in transactions. This is worldwide. First time ever this year this has happened. Cash still makes up, though, 85% of all transactions, mostly because of the small transactions, meaning buying and selling stuff. So cash is king on the small transaction basis. But think about your use of credit cards and debit cards. Now, what's the danger here? Well, cash danger used to be counterfeiting the American dollars or counterfeiting the currency. That's still a problem. But now the danger is hackers, isn't it? Hackers are getting more aggressive, more widespread. All your information is out there, and it's getting more and more dangerous to do your credit card and debit card transactions over the internet. So it's more and more dangerous. But still, I don't see how this trend is going to end. I think it's going to just continue. It's just more convenience. And I can see there's ways to make it more and more secure. And that, of course, they're always working on that to try to make it more and more secure. But they're going to have to. They have to stay ahead of the criminals. Tops on our list of priorities is your call, as you know. So bring your questions anytime. 888-99-CHART. Okay, let's go to Jay in Cupertino. How you doing, Jay?
Good. I got a question on the technical analysis software package out there. I saw the Meta stock demo a couple of weeks ago. So I just wanted to get your comment on if you're using Meta stock or any package like that, which can, with the real-time data, with a lot of oscillator built in and can generate a buy or sell signals like that.
I will tell you this, Jay. We do use a technical analysis program called VanceGit by eSignal, but it doesn't give you buy and sell signals. My experience with buying things like Meta stock, TC2000, and there's several of those out there. The signals, to me, are always great looking back, but are not very good looking forward. You know, they'll say, oh, you should have bought it here and it would have went up. Yeah, well, but you didn't tell me then to buy it there. You know, I find, Jay, that they don't work very good. I know some of those programs, when it says to sell, that's probably when you should think about buying. And when it says to buy, it's probably when you should think about selling. Because they switch at the tops and bottoms. They have a buy signal when it runs up for a while, then they buy. They have a buy signal because it's run up for a while. They think it's going to run up forever. Not in this market, it doesn't. Then when it runs down, they have a sell signal because it's coming down. Then all of a sudden, it switched the other way. It's pretty difficult. Be very careful, Jay. There's nothing wrong with them because they give you a lot of information, oscillators and advanced decline lines, all kinds of studies. And if you get good at it, you won't need them. You'll do it yourself.
Let's go to Mark in San Bernardino. Hi, Mark. How are you doing?
Pretty good. How are you doing, Steve?
Pretty good. I appreciate you calling.
A little while back, you wrote in your weekly newsletter about selling short.
Yes.
And that you said that if you didn't know what a stock being hard to borrow meant, then you shouldn't be selling short.
Right.
So I'm asking you, what does it mean when it's hard to borrow, and how would you find that out on a particular stock?
Okay, good question. Let's talk about what is shorting for people out there. Of course, shorting is where you borrow somebody else's stock and you sell it at today's high price, at least you're hoping today's high price. And then since you borrowed it, you have to give it back someday. And the idea is that the stock will go, price will go down and you give it back. For you to borrow somebody else's stock to sell it, that means that there has to be enough stock out there in the float that's on a margin account with other people's stocks, and their stocks are a margin account, meaning they'll allow it to be borrowed. It means that there's got to be enough out there for you to borrow. Sometimes there's not enough, okay? They're not allowing it to be borrowed, and it could be any stock out there. Most of the time, the big stocks are easy to borrow, but it could be any stock out there. And many times, if it depends on your trading platform that you're using, are you using like E-Trade or...
E-Trade.
I'm not sure about E-Trade, but many of these trading platforms will put a little HB behind the little symbol when you try to sell something short. HB means hard to borrow.
Okay.
That means it's not a very liquid stock. And when you want to get out, in other words, you want to buy it back, It could be a problem because there's not much in the float out there.
Right.
So you could drive your price up, and there's too many people shorting that same stock. Remember, shorting a stock is supportive of the price because everybody's got to buy it back again someday.
Right.
So try to stay away from the hard-to-borrow stocks. Then you won't have any trouble getting out when the time is to get out.
Okay. And that'll just be indicated
many
when
times
you actually try to enter the order?
It's usually when you first put the order in. You know what you do is you got to call E-Trade and say, how do I know and where does it show up and how can I find that out?
Right.
But most platforms tell you.
Okay. Great.
Thanks
very
Mark.
Much.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. We're now going to go talk to Nick in Hayward. How you doing, Nick?
Yeah, hi, Steve. How are you, sir?
I'm good. Thank you for the call. I appreciate it.
Thank you, sir. The other day, I had a discussion with my friend. Mm-hmm. Someone had passed away, and they had a just regular will.
Yes.
So I was telling him, if there's a will, does it have to go to probate? And he says, yeah, I still have to go through probate. Can you tell me something about it?
Yes, you still have to go through probate, even with a will. I'm not an expert in this area, but, you know, you have an executor of the will. You know, who the will name an executor. The only way you can really avoid probate is if you have a trust. And therefore,
right.
The trust will avoid probate. Okay?
Uh-huh.
But if you have a will, just plain will just gives directions of who gets what. And someone is executing that, called an executor. I've been an executor twice now. My brother died and my parents died. As an executor, I had to go through probate one time here in California, one time in Arizona. And... you, as the executive, you just follow the rules and dictates of the will, and you should be fine. You give everybody a copy of the will that has anything to do with the will, and you just follow its dictates, and you should be fine. But you do have to go through probate with the will, yes.
Oh, but there was no executor named here.
Okay, so then the state will pick an executor. If there's no executor named in the will, the state will pick the executor, and that executor will probably be a law firm, and they'll charge you, I think it's 2% of the estate or something. There's a There's a figure that they charge. So if it's a $100,000 estate, they get $2,000, you know. I don't remember exactly the amount, but it's pretty. It's like that amount, somewhere in that range. And that's
how that. So what I hear from you is have a trust, right?
A trust will be much easier, and you can avoid probate if you have all the things that are valuable named in the trust. And I like avoiding probate. Probate just prolongs the process.
Right, right. Okay. Thank you, Steve, very much.
You're welcome.
Appreciate
the call. Yeah, and the only reason I know a little bit about everybody is because I had to go through it twice. And of course, laws change and you need to talk to an attorney and all those wonderful things. Don't just believe me what I say. I'm not the expert on that. But that's how it worked out for me.
Would you like to see a webinar on the new America? There's more manufacturing than you might think. High-tech plants opening in Kentucky. It all spells opportunity for investors. Broaden your knowledge. Become an InvestTalk insider. It's free. Sign up yourself on InvestTalk.com. Just click on the InvestTalk tab.
888-99-CHART, 888-992-4278. Do you know that Tesla made money the third quarter? You do know that their gigabyte battery factory is opening in what? I know that it's not too far down the road. And made in the, and this factory's in Nevada, making batteries. It's in Nevada. How come it's not in Mexico or China or something? Why did they decide to do it here? So don't think that all manufacturing is taking place outside the United States. No, that's not true. That's not true. Now, I will say this. A lot of jobs did leave here, but not all. Anyways, Tesla announced Q3 earnings and were positive. Second quarter in their history where they had made money. But really, did they make money really? And the answer is probably not. Because, remember their Model 3 that's coming out and they're trying to roll it out? That's the Model 3 is the less expensive version of their Model, 6? And the Model X is the kind of SUV-looking one. Remember that? So in 2017, next year, they're going to have to produce a lot of cash. And the estimate is about $1.7 billion to finish out to roll out the Model 3. Of course, that means not making money. Now, you have to give them credit. They delivered 24,500 cars in Q3 this year. That was 111% more this quarter, the Q3, than a year ago quarter. So they're doing very well. Very well. On the other hand, they're buying Solar City, which makes, in most analysts' eyes, and mine too, I must say, I'm not an analyst, but in my eyes, makes no sense. Makes no sense. Of course, Musk is a genius, and I'll give him that. So maybe he's got his, he says there's synergies there. Well, what, you could have a solar panel on top of the SUV, a solar panel on the car to generate electricity. Is that your synergy? That's not going to save Solar City. There's not enough cars you can make to give them enough panels to have that happen. So I'm not sure where the synergy comes from. I'm just not getting it. So because Solar City was going bankrupt. It needs $1.7 billion to keep going. So, did Tesla really make money? Well, if the Solar City deal goes through, it hasn't gone through yet. And we do know they need to borrow big bucks to finish out their Model 3, which, that's okay. Starting a big company, you're going to have costs. I understand that. But did they actually make money? Well, they're going to show not making money in the next few years because of the new models. That's a problem. Not making money is a problem. How much will you accept? How much will the average investor accept in debt before and losses before they decide that Tesla's not worth $200 a share? with no earnings. That's the problem. What is it really worth? Now, experts, I've seen experts range from like $150 to $350 a share. But those estimates, those analysts, yeah, they don't know. Just rolling the dice. You're listening to Invest Talk. Now you have a partner in managing your 401k at work. It's a new program from us, KPP Financial, called My 401k. Find out more about it on investtalk.com. Click on the Invest Talk tab and then My 401k.
You're listening to an encore presentation of Invest Talk. Please call with your questions and comments, though, 888-99-CHART, 888-99-CHART, and Steve will answer them on the next Invest Talk.
Hi, Steve. Hi, Justin. This is Bruce from New York. Thank you both for a great show. I'd like to ask an unusual question regarding the best way to purchase bonds. I've always purchased equities, mutual funds, and bond funds using online via Fidelity or Vanguard. I'm in my 60s, and I want to begin to reduce risk and buy short-term, triple B or better corporate bonds from large, well-capitalized companies in a laddered approach. Is using the online tools Fidelity and Vanguard an appropriate way of buying bonds, or should I use a different method? To be competitive and to be cute about it, I was going to open both programs simultaneously and price the similar bonds or the same bonds and buy it from the cheaper company. Looking forward to your response. Thanks a lot. Bye.
Yeah, bonds are a little more difficult than stocks. There's work involved with them. When I say work, it means you have to understand the underlying fundamentals of the company that you're buying. He's buying corporate bonds for corporations. You know, the quality of the bond, I'm not so keen on, you know, necessarily just basing the decision solely on the quality of the bond. But I do like investment grade or better, meaning high quality. And buying them is different because there's bond dealers out there, bond desks. And we buy through the bond desk that we have developed a relationship with because they're the ones that get the best bonds. The bond market is not nearly as transparent as the stock market. And when you're using, like you're suggesting, you're going to use two desks and see which one offers you the best deal, you're going to find that you're going to get different deals from different desks. And if you had a lot of money in bonds, millions of dollars buying bonds, $1 million at a time, you'll get better deals. And when you're only buying $10,000 or $20,000 worth of a corporate bond, They don't really want to deal with you. You're too small potatoes. It's a difficult area. But the way you really want to do it is develop a relationship with a bond dealer. And the only way to do that is if you have enough money to make it worth his while. They make very, very small commissions on these bonds. So, yeah, and they're the ones, you got to go out and find the bonds. You know, once you see them on these desks, they've already been offered to all the institutions, everybody else, and what's left is what's left. And what do you think is left? You think the best deals are left? No. That's not what's left. Not the best deals. So it's a difficult area, you know, for people to get into because it's not like you can go out and say, well, what's the stock selling at? And who, what's the bid and what's the offer? You know, it's not that simple, unfortunately.
Choosing the right investment products, adjusting to life's surprise events. If it's about money and it's important to you, we want to know more about it. We're here for you. 888-99-CHART is how to reach Steve or Justin right now on Invest Talk.
Let's talk about more bonds and more. How about 10-year Treasury bonds? You know, they are at the highest yield since June, meaning interest rates gone up. So that means the value of those Treasury bonds have gone down. Why did that happen? Because it's a worldwide phenomenon, not just here in the U.S., it's everywhere. Why is that happening? It's a very simple explanation here. It's very simple. And you've heard me talk about it in the last couple of weeks, that it seems like investors worldwide are figuring out, coming to the conclusions that the central banks worldwide have finally come to their senses thinking, well, maybe this QE, this quantitative easing, this making money really, you know, printing a lot of money is not working. It's not boosting economies. So the investors are thinking maybe central banks are going to turn away from QE, which I think is true, and interest rates actually are going to start rising. We better get ready for that. If you notice, there's still pretty good demand for short-term U.S. bonds, but the long-terms are moving up. Yields are moving up. Values are going down. Fed hasn't done anything. Of course, you know the Fed's going to probably raise rate in December. That could be another part of it. But I think it's more of a groundswell worldwide phenomena of central banks, Bank of Japan, the United Kingdom, Draghi, or whatever his name is, the ECB bank. They all appear to be now talking about, thinking about doing something different or stopping their QE. And that will mean interest rates will rise. Now, it's going to be slow. Don't think of anything fast. Our time's up for this hour. I'm financial advisor Steve Peasley, and I am president of KPP Financial, a registered investment advisor firm. And for Jess Decline and everybody else at KPP, I thank you for listening today. Let's do it again tomorrow.
Because of the nature of the interactive dialogue inherent in the format of this program, it's important for listeners to understand that not all comments made will apply to them specifically. Nothing said shall be taken to be investment advice, or shall statements on this program be considered an offer to buy or sell securities. Such advice is rendered solely on an individual basis, and at times will require that the investor review a prospectus before investing. Steve Peasley and Justin Klein are principals of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, a registered investment advisor. For more information regarding KPP's investment advisors, call 1-800-557-5461. InvestTalk is a copyrighted program of Klein, Pavlis, and Peasley Financial, which retains all rights.